Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Frenari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Frenari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health.
Welcome back. This is Carol Peterson, your host for today. I'm a registered pharmacist, and I'm also certified in nutrition. So today, we have something really special, and we should have talked about this long time ago. We have a discussion on something that really got started several decades ago. And what's happened several decades ago was the FDA approved a drug called naltrexone, 1984. And here in New York City, there was a Dr. Bernard Bihari who took a look at this particular drug. This drug was designed to cause a blockage of the body's endorphins. And it was intended, these natural pain relievers, euphoric molecules in your body, it was intended that these molecules would be blocked by this drug. And in blocking that feeling, that it could be used for people who were addicted to alcohol and various drugs. Dr. Bernard Bihari started looking at its relationship with the immune system. And he did some very exciting work starting in 1985 using this in very, very low doses. I have a really special guest today to discuss LDN, specifically low-dose LDN. Her name is Linda Elsegood, and she has done a phenomenal effort in bringing to the world the use of low-dose naltrexone and how successful this has been to help people with a whole variety of diseases. Welcome to Take Charge of Your Health, Linda. Welcome to our show, and let's have a little bit of a story. What's your story about low-dose naltrexone and how it came into your life and what you've done with all of that?
Okay, well, thank you very much for having invited me, Carol. First of all, I have to point out I am not a medical professional. I do not have any medical qualifications of any sort, but I have been working with LDN and thousands of doctors, pharmacists around the world in the last 18 years. Now, I have multiple sclerosis, and I was told back in 2003 that I was secondary progressive MS and nothing more could be done for me. Now, at that time, you could draw a line right down the middle of my forehead, my nose, my chin, right the way down, divide my body into two. The left-hand side was numb with pins and needles. Very, very painful. You think if something is numb that you haven't got any feeling, but it actually heightened the feeling. So even a sheet rubbing on my left hand side was really painful. I lost the hearing in my left ear. I had double vision. I had cognitive problems. It was as if English had become my second language. I couldn't recall vocabulary. I spoke very slurred, as if I'd had a stroke. So I would try desperately hard to put a sentence together in my head, which made sense to me. But when it came out, nobody understood me. That was very upsetting. I also was choking on my food. I had no balance, so, and I had vertigo. I spent a lot of time on the floor because I used to furniture walk, wall walk, and then fall over. The leg strength in my left leg used to come on, and then suddenly it was as if somebody had turned off a switch and the whole strength would go and I would fall over. I had chronic fatigue, such bad fatigue. I was only awake like 4 hours a day. I just slept, which was such a blessing because once I got to sleep, I didn't know all the pain I was in. I had restless legs, twitching muscles, burning limbs. And I can remember I had this sensation that just at the base of my skull, that I had got water trickling down my back and I could feel the water trickling down. It was my body playing tricks on me, but it was a horrible, horrible feeling. So, you know, cognitively, I couldn't do anything. Fatigue-wise, I couldn't do anything. And my neurologist examined me and he got me to do lots of tests. And I can remember how upset I was. He got me to try and walk by, like you test drunk people, put heel, toe, heel, toe. I had to hang on to everything and still couldn't do it. I was so upset with myself because I knew I could do it, but I couldn't do it, you know. That was really upsetting.
Okay, let me just interject here a second. This is a call-in program today, and I want to give the number out. You gave us really a wonderful, detailed description of what MS feels like. Our number is 212-209-2877 if you'd like to call in as we're talking about low-dose naltrexone. And in this case, we're talking about how it affected Linda and her MS diagnosis and treatment. So go ahead, Linda, what happened then?
Yes, so the neurologist got me to do this test and other tests. I'd had, prior to this meeting, every 3 months I was having a relapse. And if you think of my quality of life as a ladder, I would have a relapse and I would drop probably 6 rungs on this ladder, and then I would gradually go up maybe 2 rungs, and then wham, I had another relapse. So how I describe it is my normal kept becoming less and less. It was quite scary. Had 3 courses of intravenous steroids, 3-day intravenous steroids in an 18-month period, which blew me up. I'm a pale person and I look like a red beach ball. I was terrible. And the amount of weight that put on me, I'd had up to neuritis. It's such a long ago now, it's hard to remember everything. But I was not in a good place. So after he'd examined me, he helped me to sit down across his desk. I don't know why he got me to sit down. And he put his hand across the desk, shook hands with me and said, "I'm really sorry to tell you, you're secondary progressive MS and there's nothing more we can do for you." And as he said the last sentence, he had got up and he opened the door to show me out. That was it. There was no plan B. There was no, well, we could look at diet. We could look at supplements. We could try this. There was nothing. There's nothing more we can do for you. And I said to my husband, I felt as though he was saying, "Go home and die quietly. Don't make a fuss. You're an embarrassment. You know, we just want to get you out of here." And I had such bad pains in my head. The size of a standard wine glass, that's the area the pain was in my head. But it wasn't consistent. It could be the front left, the back right. It moved. So I was telling people about this pain that moved, and I could see the look in their eyes thinking, does she know what she's talking about, type of thing. It wasn't always in the same place, but it really yes. did move. And why it moved, I have got no idea. And I had also a feeling when I walked, it was like walking on crushed glass with stinging nettles thrown in. It was so painful, I could barely bear to put my feet on the floor, let alone walk. And that was
So how did you go from that doctor's visit with such a grim ending to looking for something else?
Well, it gets worse. In such pain, and things were so different then. This was in 2002, maybe. I'd spoken to the receptionist at the doctor's and said that I was in all this pain and I hadn't got any more painkillers. And the doctor actually came out. My husband was working away and I was home alone. But my next door neighbour used to pop in to look after me. So the doctor came in, he gave me this pot of very strong painkillers and he went and fetched me a glass of water. And I said to him, how long do you think it will be before I start to feel a little bit better? So he thought about it and he said, I think if you were going to feel any better, you would have done by now. So he went and our life was horrible. In as much as my parents were really upset, if we could take it away from you, we would willingly have it.
Wow. So you were really at the end of anybody's rope as far as humanly possible. So then what happened? Where did the doors open?
So I was really contemplating on taking all these pills. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, just...
Oh. Yeah, it's hard to do that again.
My 15-year-old daughter would have been the person to find me.
Uh-huh. Oh.
I couldn't do that. So the only option was I'd got to prove everybody wrong. But where to start? Back in 2002, the internet wasn't like it is today. It was hard to find information. So I'd lost my bowel and bladder control as well, so I was visiting the toilet all the
yes.
time. But yeah. when I got up, I could sit for 10 minutes, that's it. 10 minutes, and then I had to go to sleep. I was so tired, I couldn't keep awake. So I was trying to find other people with MS to find out what they were doing. I knew I wasn't unique. I knew there were thousands of people around the world who'd got MS, if not more, maybe millions, I don't know, as to what they were doing. And I managed to find some people in the US who were using LDN. And some of them had been using it since you were saying that they were actually Dr. Paris patients going back to 1985. So everyone was saying the same, if it doesn't do you any good, it's not going to do you any harm. I didn't really care at that point. Side effects, you know, I would have tried it anyway because there was nothing else to try. It's naltrexone is a prescription only drug, therefore LDN is a prescription only drug. I'd got to find somebody who would prescribe it for me. Now, by this time, my GP, my general practitioner, had retired, and I had a young lady doctor who looked similar age to my eldest daughter. I'm sure she was older, but she looked very, very young. And I took the information and I explained what it was, and it was so refreshing because she could look me in the eye my old doctor couldn't look me in the eye because he couldn't fix me. Mm-hmm. And that upset him that he couldn't fix me. Mm-hmm. So she said to me, I will read it, I will speak to the partners in the practice and find out if they'll let me prescribe it for you. Come back in 2 weeks. So I went back and she said, I'm really sorry, they won't allow me to prescribe. But
oh, no.
If it was me, I'd want to try it. So if you can find somebody to prescribe it for you, I'll monitor you. Now, I thought that was really kind, so I didn't feel as though I was being abandoned. Mm-hmm. I got a co-pilot with me mm-hmm. on my journey. So I then found a Dr. Bob Lawrence, a doctor in Wales, who sadly has passed away now, and he agreed to prescribe it for me. Now, he told me, and in those days, people started on 3 milligrams for a month and then went up to 4.5. That is not the case today. Some people start as low as half a milligram, you know, yeah. or 1.5. Anyway, the protocol has changed.
That's in contrast to the 50 milligrams that it comes out.
Exactly. And yes, the 50 milligrams are also taken 3 times a day. So people take, for addiction, 150 yeah. milligrams a day. Uh-huh. And when it was trialed back in the 70s, it was only found harmful to the liver in doses of 300 milligrams a day. So you can see how really safe a drug it is. Uh-huh. But Dr. Lawrence said to me that, you know, I might have sleep disturbance, vivid dreams and upset stomach. And I was thinking to myself, I want all of these side effects. working. So I took it, nothing. I could have been taking saccharin, did absolutely uh-huh. nothing. And then suddenly, 3 weeks later, because living in my head at that time was like living in a television set that wasn't tuned in. You know, the brightness uh-huh. wasn't right, the contrast wasn't right. I couldn't hear, I couldn't see. And suddenly it was as though that television set was slowly being tuned in, and it was amazing. It did take me another 18 months to get to where I am today. But in a case of, okay, now I've found something that has given me back hope for the future and a quality of life. Yes, I have MS. No, I can't do everything I used to do. But with planning and being careful, you know, I'm not complaining at all. So what did I want to do with this knowledge? Did I want to say, I'm okay, I'll get on with my life? Or do I want to help those people that were in the deep dark place that I was in? Well, it was a no-brainer. So I founded the LDN Research Trust in 2004, in February. So we've been going 18 and a bit years. We've helped hundreds of thousands of people around the world. We work with doctors, pharmacists, researchers. We organise LDN conferences. And wherever you hold a conference, it's never in the right place for everybody. So we always live stream it. So anybody who's got fast internet can join in. And education is key. And the number of consultants now that prescribe LDN is amazing. I mean, pain specialists, gastroenterologists, dermatologists, gastroenterologists, rheumatologists, people at the top of their game who are uh-huh. seeing that people are getting good results with LDN. It's truly amazing.
Now, you have a website, and we'll repeat that at the end, but it's the LDNresearchTrust.org. I have that right? And
yes.
You have a phenomenal amount of information that you have there. I want to also say that you're an author or a compiler of 2 books, the LDN book, Volume 1 and Volume 2, with an incredible amount of research in there. You have listings for pharmacies where you can have this low-dose naltrexone compounded for you. You have practitioner lists. You have unbelievable amount of data. And I was just thinking, all this started in, let's say 1985 with Dr. Bahari. They say it takes 50 years for something to be generally accepted, and maybe we're right on track because it's been a long time. And the amount of work and the amount of information that you were able to spearhead and bring together, I just want to maybe interject here a little bit of my own experience, why I even was aware of this. I did read a book way back when, Up the Creek Without a Paddle, Marianne Boyle Bradley, her book, I thought was astonishing. And then, I can't even read my writing. It's Julia Shapik's book on taking charge of your health and advocating and getting LDN for any number of autoimmune situations. So I was working in a pharmacy, and one of our pharmacists had a boy who was diagnosed with autism. And in his journey, he connected with a doctor who wished to try low-dose naltrexone on some of his autistic patients. And we compounded at that time just a liquid solution of LDN. I can't remember if we flavored it or not, but that was, he did an in-office study. The results were never published, but some children did very well, and some children it didn't apparently help. So that was my background, and I was fortunate enough to come to a couple of your conferences. And it's overwhelming, all the situations that LDN can be useful for. You mentioned the medical specialties, but could you elaborate a little bit more, like what kind of diseases or situations have been successfully treated with LDN?
Okay, well, you said at the beginning that LDN helps boost the endorphins, which is the body's own natural feel-good factor and painkiller. We have since learned that it works on the toll-like receptors as well, which reduces the inflammation in the body. Now, all chronic diseases have high inflammation, and LDN is good for bringing down the inflammation, as is using diet and supplements. There are other things you can do to help that. But if a chronic disease has an autoimmune component, we know that LDN has a really good chance of working. For example, rheumatoid arthritis, type 1 diabetes, hyperthyroidism, Hashimoto's, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, many chronic pain conditions. Now, we have a radio show, and I've interviewed, I think we've got about 3,000 archived shows, where I've interviewed doctors, researchers, pharmacists, and patients. And I had this lady who had osteoarthritis in her coccyx, and she was in a lot of pain. She couldn't sit, couldn't move, couldn't do anything, and again, nothing more could be done with her. And she wanted to share her LDN story. And I was thinking to myself, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, get that. There's an autoimmune component there. But osteoarthritis doesn't have an autoimmune component. Why does it work? And I interviewed her, and she was saying how well that the LDN had helped with her pain. So I then was talking to more pain specialists and rheumatologists, and again, they were confirming that there are patients without an autoimmune component that LDN works really, really well on pain. We also have a really good documentary on opioids and LDN. It was our way of trying to help with the opioid crisis. So many people have become legal drug addicts through fault of their own, purely on prescription medication, painkillers.
Right.
And Dr. Samyadev Datta was telling me about his patients that he'd managed to wean off of opioids and put on LDN, and the LDN was working even better. So we went to see him. He's in New Jersey, to film him talking about it and interviewing some of his patients. And he said to me, I wanted you to hear from my patients as well as myself, because I want you to hear their stories. Now, when you talk to somebody who's been in a terrible place and they want to tell you how awful it was, what happened, you know, how they found LDN, and it can take 20 minutes or so to hear somebody's story. And he said to me, so I'd like to introduce you to my patients. And he opened this door, and it's the truth. The whole circumference of the room was full of patients. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be here 2 days. These stories. But it was so humbling. It was very emotional hearing these stories. And he had an RN who injured her back or something. And she'd been on heavy duty, long-term opioids for like 20 years. But her pain level was still like a 9 or a 10. But she couldn't stop the opioids, even though they weren't working. And she found out about LDN and Dr. Datta and asked him if he would prescribe it for her. So he said, you know, okay. Now, with microdosing, and nobody listening should try this on their own, it has to be under medical supervision. So don't think you can do it yourself. You could go into withdrawal, end up in ICU, not recommended. But by using really microdosing, like 0.001, the amount of naltrexone is smaller than a grain of sugar. You know, it's very, very minimal. But what it does is it makes opioids more effective. So that means the patient can start to titrate down on the opioids, and at the same time they titrate up on this microdose of LDN. And this nurse, my 15-year-old, after having looked after me for so long, became a nurse. Nurses think they know best for themselves, you know? I was trying to put it very diplomatically. But anyway, Dr. Samia Devdatta told this lady she'd got to go slow, and she was having none of it. You know, I'm going to do it quicker than this. I know my body. I will check with you and all this kind of thing. And I can't remember how many weeks it was, but it was like lightning in my book, that she came off of these opioids that she'd been addicted to for 20 years and still being in pain. She had transitioned from the opioids to LDN, and her pain, you can listen to it on the documentary, I think it might be a 3 or a 4, where she can feel the pain, but it doesn't stop her from doing her daily activities. And these people in this room full of people, were all telling me similar things, you know, and crying and saying, if I'd only known about LDN however many years ago, I wouldn't have had to suffer so much. I mean, it was, as I say, very, very emotional and humbling what these people had been through.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. I just read a book about this whole opioid thing, and blew me away, kind of changed my mind. Yet I was thinking, Linda, what do you think? I was thinking way back when, before we started doing synthetic and really powerful derivatives, like tincture of opium might be the natural equivalent for low dose naltrexone. But I don't know. It's my theory.
Getting away from opioids has to be a good thing. But there are certain cases where you need the opioid painkillers. It's just a case of not abusing them and not being dependent on them.
Yeah, the trouble is the popularity of oxycodone for any little pain, and people have become addicted. With a dental procedure and their dentist giving them oxycodone, they take one or two tablets and then they're hooked. They can't get off. It's really a tragedy. But I think we're making some gains. And in that area, certainly we have heightened awareness. I just was at an A4M meeting, but I didn't see this, but I had reported that somebody was doing LDN pellets for weight loss. Had you heard anything like this?
No, I haven't. Yes, I mean, that I'm talking about for autoimmune diseases and pain, etc.,
yep,
is rapid release. You know, you can't have a prolonged release, which is what it would be in a pellet.
That's right, that's right. You're absolutely right now.
I say, I'm not medical. I don't know how that works, but
I'm gonna take that back and say no, that doesn't make sense. But yes, so the mechanism is that it does block those receptors. You get a temporary block of your endorphins, but it's short because of the rapid activity on and off the receptors, and then in response your body puts out more endorphins. And so people who really probably have been struggling from a deficiency now have adequate amounts. And there's wonderful connections to the immune system, as we were talking about. I find it interesting that one of the areas where LDN works extremely quickly and effectively is the gut. People who are struggling with irritable bowel and all kinds of colitis seem to get very rapid relief. Can you verify that? Is that one of the most rapid resolving thing? And why might that be?
One of our medical advisors, Dr. Leonard Weinstock, is a gastroenterologist, and he is amazing. He has worked on writing lots of papers. With Dr. Jill Smith as well, she did the first Crohn's study and a pediatric Crohn's, but ulcerative colitis, irritable bowel syndrome, leaky gut, irritable bowel disease, all of these different problems that you have with the gut. You also, LDN isn't the magic bullet that is going to fix everything. If you don't exercise, if you eat junk food, if you don't take vitamins, minerals and supplements that you may be deficient in, your body isn't going to work correctly. You know, LDN can only do so much. So working with somebody who can work with you to find out what you are deficient in and what could help work alongside LDN is really important.
So I want to take a little break here. This is Carol Peterson. I'm your host today of Take Charge of Your Health. We're speaking with Linda Elsegood. She started the LDN Research Trust. It's just dedicated to getting the word out on the effectiveness of using a drug that was initially started for the use of addiction in very low doses, and getting very remarkable results in all sorts of autoimmune diseases, pain relief, and many, many more areas. This is a call-in show. Please call in 212-209-2877. And we can take your questions. Linda is probably one of the most informed people on this subject on the whole planet. So it's such a pleasure to have you here, Linda. So what? How did you get this LDN Research Trust off the ground? I mean, it's one thing being an idea, and it's another thing to grow it to this absolutely amazing resource that you've done.
So I was a woman on a mission, and I'm from England, and you have to become a charity, you have to go through the Charity Commission, and I was told, no, it's not a charitable, it doesn't fit the criteria to be a charitable organisation, because LDN is a drug. Uh-huh. So, and it was very difficult. For 5 months it was very difficult, and I wouldn't be told no. So they would ask me questions, and it went from department to department to department. Once one department was happy, they sent the file to the next department, and it was a case of starting off with even more questions. And I wouldn't be surprised at the number of people that I dealt with, that I probably dealt with the janitor as well. I don't think there was anybody else left to talk to me. They were very nice people, and I would have to send documentation. I'd have to send it by recorded delivery, make sure they'd got it. Then I'd phone and say, have you got my letter? And they would say yes. And I was desperate, you know. And so what's the answer? You know, can we move on to the next step? Oh, it's diaretized for 3 weeks' time. So that was really frustrating. Yes, they'd got everything, but no, they couldn't look at it. So it just went on and on and on, and eventually we got the charity status, but anybody who was faint-hearted would have given in before then. It was very, very difficult, very expensive as well. But it was at the back of my mind that I wanted to help these people who were like myself, and that was my driving force, and has been all the time. It's become my way of life. I run the charity from home. I start when I wake up, and I finish emails when I go to bed. I work UK time, Europe time, New Zealand, Australia, Eastern time, Central time, Western time. And it's always so nice when doctors phone up that they're thinking of prescribing LDN for a patient and they want more information. And on our website, we update it monthly, the latest clinical trials, and you'd be surprised, there are hundreds now and papers that have been published. And we also have a section where LDN in the news. And because we had so much information 3 years ago, it was rather difficult to navigate. So we now have a search by condition data. So from my point of view, having multiple sclerosis, you can actually search multiple sclerosis, and it brings up all the clinical trials, papers, past conference presentations, interviews with doctors, researchers, pharmacists, etc. It's made it really easy to navigate looking for conditions, and doctors find that really helpful as well if they're looking for a not such common condition.
How many conditions do you have listed there?
I would say about 500 now.
Wow.
There are a lot of conditions there. But we're also, if anybody is interested, we have a webinar this evening that's being held at Yale, Lawrence and Memorial Hospital for Medical Professionals. If a medical professional is listening and you'd like to attend, it's free, and you can earn up to 2.5 CME credits. If you email me, Linda, Linda, at ldnrt.org, I will send that information to you. You can attend in person, it's in Connecticut, or you can watch the live stream. We had an LDN app, which cost an absolute fortune to keep updating. Every time Google Play or Apple, the App Store, did update, you had to update the app. So it was just like something you had to continually do. But we've found another way around that we can have an app without going through the App Store, where people can put on their smartphones, tablets, PCs, Macs, and there are direct links to find a pharmacist, find a doctor, clinical trials, that kind of thing.
So you can get most of the things that are on your website also with the app? Oh, that's
and
amazing.
There is also a health tracker app. So you can put in, you know, your journey from when you first started. Did you have any side effects? How many doses did you try? What dosage forms did you use? And then there's a journal, and we ask people if they will take part monthly. But it also gives quality of life, pain levels, mood, all kinds of exercise, all sorts of things. How many medications do you take? You know, usually when people have been on an LDN for a few months, let's take fibromyalgia, for example.
Yes.
Many people with fibromyalgia can take 14 different medications.
Oh my gosh.
And once they've been on LDN for a few months, some of them take zero, just LDN, but some might just take three or four, which is huge, you know, to be able to drop that much. But putting myself off now. But some people with all these medications, the doctors keep adding another one. You know, you've got extra pain here, or you've got problems with this. And every medication carries a list of side effects that could happen. You know, and some of the lists are as if they've been written on a toilet roll. I mean, there's so many. But of course, if you've got the chance of getting, let's say, 40, one of 40 side effects, and then the second medication has got 30 possible side effects, and the more you put in this cocktail, people then end up with a horrible side effect. So the doctors then say, but that's okay, we've got a tablet for that.
Yes.
So then you end up taking another medication to combat the side effects from the medication you're already taking. And to me, that is rather a slippery slope to go down when you get to that stage. But you can understand people if their quality of life is really bad and they can't function and they're offered something to help. You try, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it certainly would. So you described how your MS progressed, and you were certainly in a very, very dire situation. Will LDN work better, quicker, faster if you haven't gotten to such extremes in the development of what's going wrong?
Okay. There are many doctors now, which is mind-blowing, that want to use LDN as a first-line treatment. So by using LDN first, before going on some of these heavy-duty toxic medications, we'll try LDN first. But I've had quite a few people contact me with MS who will say things like, oh, I've been diagnosed with MS, but I haven't got any symptoms, I'm absolutely fine. I'm just looking into LDN for the future. So, okay, that's fine. But how about if you start it now and you don't go downhill?
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like a good idea? And then some people will say, oh, but I don't want to take any medication. You know, so it's tricky. And I have found it very difficult over the years to let people decide for themselves. When LDN worked really well for me, I knew a young man who's not so young now, I think he's about 40, but he had Crohn's since the age of 7. And he was always having parts of his bowel removed. I mean, really, really ill. And I was telling him about LDN. And he knew how well LDN worked for me. And he said, not really interested unless my gastroenterologist tells me.
So sad.
But I have to respect people's decisions. You know, I can't make people do something they don't want to do. So I give people all the information and let them make up their own minds and answer any questions that they may have.
That's what we're all about on this program, Take Charge of Your Health. And I can't think of a better example of what you've done. And even in this extremely dire situation, some people would just accept that and count themselves, their days are limited and they're going to suffer because that's what your doctor told you. I think we've reached a place where our medical professionals are being actually controlled into offering only this and that, and it's usually decided by committee. And you have what I call flowchart medicine, if this, then that. And doctors aren't allowed to deviate. They're not allowed to try what may be the best thing for the patient. Some years ago, I came across some papers, and it was called N of One Studies. And I believe this is probably the most scientific method and really illustrates what the practice of medicine should be. That you have a patient, a person present themselves with a problem, and you have a potential solution. So you try that solution. And then if it hasn't done as well as you'd like, then you have a little bit of a washout period and try another solution. And this indeed had been what the practice of medicine would be. Like you'd have dozens of N-of-1 situations with your patients through the day, and documenting this and looking for the best solution for the person in need of help is really, truly a scientific method. There's so much that is flawed with what we're doing with huge, big, double-blind, placebo, crossover tests that the individual's reaction or opportunities are really being squashed by that kind of attitude. And I think we need to go back to it. We need medical practitioners who do consider more than one pathway when they're not confined by their big medical, business, I guess, the big medical business with the big buildings, and everybody is charged with doing a certain thing and only that, whether it's helpful or not, this is what we do. And big hospitals operate that way too, to try and use something that has potential. It's sometimes really difficult to get a practitioner to shift because they are really burdened by all this administrative forces that want them to do just certain things for certain people, and that's it.
Mm. And so many patients will present to their medical professional with all these symptoms, and they look at the symptoms of treating the symptoms, but what we should be doing is looking at the cause that is creating those symptoms.
That's right. And sort of like a medical detective. And it's really amazing to me. There are so many situations where people present themselves to their doctor, they're given some routine tests, but the tests aren't designed to find the cause of those symptoms. And just using maybe a different panel, you get a whole different situation. I just had a young woman who was having trouble with obesity and acne and difficult periods. And I put together a test panel for her, and I was so thrilled when it came back because there were so many things that were out of whack. Now, if we had not done the specific tests that I recommended, she could have taken a normal blood chemistry and CBC that is done routinely in doctor's offices and never saw the things that were really off. And once you see something that's gone a bit off, now you have a direction to help them address what's really going on. And I think that's a problem. And I've often said to people, when you're doing tests, maybe ask the question of what is this test going to reveal and what plan of action can you do when something is revealed? Because there's testing, too, that there's nothing you can do with it after you had a test, because nobody knows what to do with a test that has come up lopsided. So it's a real, real challenge. We are getting pretty close to the end of our show, Linda, and I'd like to make sure people have all the resources they need from you. And I'd also like you to have a few final words for this program. This is a possibility of treatment that has so many opportunities for people if they want to explore it. And unlike the horrible time you had getting it started, it really took a lot of work to get that initiative started. Now you help people in numerous ways to make it easier for themselves to get this started. So go ahead. Why don't you start with the invitation to the webinar and then your pages.
Okay. So it's a medical professional webinar. Afterwards, patients can watch it as well. There are two pain specialists, Dr. Neil Mehta and Dr. Samudev Datta, and pharmacist Stephen Dixon, who will be talking about the history, mechanism of action of LDM. If you want to either attend live or the live stream or watch the recording, send me an email, linda@ldnrt.org, and I will reply to you and send you the links you need. And our website is ldnresearchtrust.org. We also have two Facebook groups. We have a medical professionals only, which is hidden, secret, private. But again, if you are a medical professional interested, you have to fill a form in first to be verified you are a medical professional. Again, use that email. We also have, there are medical professionals in this group as well as patients, the main LDN Research Trust Facebook group, and I think we have getting on for nearly 50,000 people in there.
Wow.
We are on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, so we do a lot of social media, and our radio shows we turn into videos, so they are also on YouTube, Vimeo, Facebook, and we have a radio show which is audio only, which goes on to about 20 something radio show platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, you know, Google and Amazon iPods, all the other platforms that I must admit I'd never even heard of. But people find us, and, you know, we have over 1,000 people a day either listening or watching. It's quite amazing. The website is very, very comprehensive. It's really well worth a look if you're a medical professional or a patient and want to learn more. And there's always the contact us form, so if anybody has any questions, we're happy to reply. We are lucky enough to have some fantastic medical advisors who will answer medical questions for us.
Okay, so I will put some of that on our Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol. And if you would, Linda, one more minute for some last remarks.
For me, Carol?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I think the take-home message would be, you know, regardless of how you feel, regardless of what you're told, there is always hope of improving your health. I think never give up. I have witnessed so many people over the years who have been told nothing more can be done, and they accept that and they go downhill very, very quickly.